Welcome back to Ashburton. We're about ready to start now.
It's Political Commentary.
With Professor Jennifer Curtin this morning. Morena, Jennifer, how are you?
I'm good, thank you.
That is good to hear. We've got some big topics to talk about today. We're going to be chatting about the Labour list. Also a bit about Todd Miller's speech at the Te Puna Rugby Club, which is back in his hometown. And also about COVID and the quarantine breaches that we're seeing at the moment, and a little bit about the situation that's going on there. But let's start with the Labour list. First of all, can you explain to us, Jennifer, what is actually going on when a party, it's the Labour Party we're talking about right now, but when a party sort of reshuffles its list, what does that actually mean?
Well, I think what happened last time was Jacinda Ardern as leader didn't really have very much input on the list. Now, the list is important because it's basically the party vote, and the party vote is what determines who in a sense forms government, because mm-hmm. most of the electorate seats are most of them are pretty safe, either Labour or National. There's a few that are marginal. So when we look at the new rankings, we see that a lot in the media have argued that Jacinda Ardern's stamp is on this one, and the way that she didn't get to have much input on the last one.
Right.
But also what we know is it's a real opportunity to promote people who have done well, bring in new people, particularly given the recent polls. So there's a real hint mm-hmm. that maybe they could go deep into their list this time round. So yeah, it's pretty important. I think the one thing that the commentators have picked up on that isn't quite correct is talking about Andrew Little being demoted compared to Phil Twyford being promoted.
Mm-hmm.
But what Labour aren't very good at communicating is that pretty much reflects the cabinet portfolio rankings. So if you look at the list of ministers and then you put them alongside the list of the party list, they pretty much match. So it's not a straightforward demotion of Andrew Little.
Right.
It's more about the portfolios that he holds are ranked seventh and not fourth.
Right. What are some of the major, I guess, things to notice on this list? Of course, that has been one that has been flagged a lot by the media, but are there any sort of new people that have been added to the list or notable changes that have stuck out for you, Jennifer?
Well, I think everybody's talking about Ayesha Verrill coming into the list. So this is the epidemiologist mm-hmm. from the South Island who's been, you know, really good in informing us about the importance of contact tracing and so on. So she's been a member of the party for a while, but it's the interesting thing is that she comes in at 18. I think the sort of sadder things to see is Louisa Wall losing her seat in Manurewa and then being put 29th, although she could get in. But also Raymond Woe, who's, you know, Labour doesn't have a good record on representing the Chinese community, and his placings have dropped. And more generally, I would say that what this list looks like is that Labour may have ceded the region to New Zealand First, and I don't think that's a particularly good strategy for Labour going forward. They look very city heavy, and they risk with Todd Muller and his connections through the Waikato and into the Bay of Plenty that if they don't have list positions dedicated to geographical region,
mm-hmm.
this puts them at risk in the future if they don't have good polls after 2020, for example.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the National Party now. Todd Muller has done his first sort of speech in his hometown, talking at the Te Puna Rugby Club, and he said this was kind of a moment for him where he was laying out his values as his party and hinting at some policy to come. What did you take away from this speech, Jennifer?
Yeah, so I think it's a turn for National compared to Bridges. He's taken Ardern's language of kindness and love, and he's owned it himself and talks about it in terms of his Catholic upbringing, his family values, his commitment to community, sports clubs, school, community organisations. So he's really he's taken what works for Ardern and shaped it in a more conservative image, if you like. And this reflects what some Republicans have been saying in the US And we know he has a passion for American politics, so he may have found some of the documents that I'm thinking about here. But there are a lot of anti-Trump Republicans who are saying that the language of kindness and compassion and love sits actually most naturally with conservatives who have a Christian bent and needs to be utilised in that way to kind of reclaim some of the space in politics and the narrative. So it really sounds like that's what Mueller is drawing out, and I think it has an appeal to many conservative and middle New Zealand families when you hear a leader talking about community values and families and being kind to each other, but in that sort of more localised sense. So there might be something in this, I think. He's definitely trying to win back conservative national voters who might not have liked Bridges.
And do you think we did see some hints about what National might be looking at as some sort of core policies or key ideas that they're going to be taking into this election year, Jennifer?
I don't think we saw anything new, and I think that's probably intentional because they'll be a bit worried that Labor's in a really good position to sort of nick some of their policies if they look good. But he did talk about reverting to some of National's tried and true, like Bill English's social investment approach.
Mm-hmm.
And that had some problems. It had some good things, but there was a real strong risk of profiling and deficit thinking in that, and targeting certain groups. So he's going to have to be careful with that if he's also using the language of love and kindness, right?
Well, let's talk a little bit now about COVID quarantine, and what we're seeing at the moment in the news is that we've got two new cases, which were international travellers come to New Zealand to visit dying relative, and we're seeing now some repercussions coming from them exiting their quarantine period early. And today, this morning in fact, Dr. Ashley Bloomfield was over on RNZ confirming that they did have contact with a friend, but it wasn't hugs and kisses as we've seen in the media over the last couple of days. What are your thoughts around this? Does this mean that it's not working? Does this mean that the quarantine is working, but this is a flaw in the system? What are your thoughts on this, Jennifer?
Yeah, well, it's not working as it should. But I think we're really, everybody's saying we will always have new cases emerge. So what this is a really good, I suppose if we're doing glass half full, is we get a really clear picture of what's not working right now, and mm-hmm. we can fix it before we get more than two cases plus the additional people who ran away from a funeral when they shouldn't have. So clearly there are, and you know, the Prime Minister's bringing in the Defence Force to manage the border aspect. The Health Department and others clearly need to fix up the, once they're in here, how the quarantine is working. Apparently there are 3,500 people in quarantine. That's quite a lot, but it could get more, be more if we want to open our borders. So there are real risks. There are some risks here. Like, we don't want to become a police state, you know, where we've got Homeland Security and doing things in a really draconian way. But we do need the machinery of government to be working properly to ensure people in New Zealand feel safe and that the borders are adequately protected. But it's a complex exercise, and I suppose the two is a really good wake-up call on we need these procedures to be right.
Well, the last thing I just wanted to touch on before we let you go, Jennifer, is this idea of the Trans-Tasman bubble that everyone's been talking about since we've kind of, I guess, heard that we're heading in a really good direction with COVID in this country, and Australia is also not doing too badly either. Do you think that, I mean, these sort of problems that we're seeing at the moment, do you think this is going to put the brakes on the idea of a Trans-Tasman bubble for a wee while?
The federal government in Australia overnight said that they don't think their borders now might, their borders may not open till 2021. So they're already squashing any immediate expectations on this, or like dampening expectations. What we also know is that Victoria, the state of Victoria, had 20 new cases either yesterday or the day before. So we're still going to see pop-ups, I suppose, of cases. But I think it's in the interests of both countries, plus the Pacific, albeit carefully, to be thinking about how to expand the bubble. And I think the diplomats and the, you know, the bureaucrats who work across the Tasman will be working out ways to make this happen. I just think on both sides there's going to be a dampening of expectations around it happening in mid-July or anything like that.
Mm. Well, thank you so much for your time this morning. Professor Jennifer Curtin, it's always a pleasure to have you on the show. We'll talk to you again in a couple of weeks.
Thanks.
See you later.
You just heard a bit of political commentary
with Professor